Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082.
Welcome to Thank Goodness It's Folk here on Sheffield Live, wherever you're listening from, whether it be on the internet, whether it be on Mixcloud, or whether it be on 93.2 FM in Sheffield. My name's James Fagan, and I'm here with you for 2 hours of very special music. My themes today are threefold. First of all, I have the great Will Allen, melodeon player and fiddle player, talking about two records that he's got coming out. One came out just 2 days ago, and the other comes out on the 9th of May. The first is Sun in the Sands with Owen Spafford, Will Allen himself, and Ben Filmer-Sankey, and that is an album of English dance music. And the second album that Will is launching comes out on the 9th of May with Becky Paimley, and it's called Great and Small, and it is fiddle and church organ. It is an extraordinary record, and I can't wait to talk to Will about it and to bring you a couple of tracks from it. My other theme today is the curlew, an endangered bird across British Isles, which is absolutely beloved by bird enthusiasts, walkers, but also has inspired a great deal of music. And I'm going to play you some songs and tunes inspired by the curlew, seeing as a few days ago, on the 21st of April, it was, as it always is on the 21st of April, International Curlew Day. And it is a chance for people involved in the conservation of curlews in their habitats to come together and celebrate this beautiful bird. And my third theme is Charballa 214, The Dowie Dens of Yarrow, an incredible song recorded by many, and I'll play you some great versions of that. All this and more on today's Thank Goodness It's Folk, here on Sheffield Live.
The Winterfell have left us. They haven't come this year. No midnight swans are calling. Those lovers lost, I fear. No plover is a nesting. The bog has gone to plow. The crying of a curlew is but a memory now. No long line set at evening in my cot with salmon sky. No trout or reel for mourning me. The catch it has run dry. Those ghosts will haunt our children, a wailing in the night, a distant cry from times gone by, an omen of our plight. For who will heal the water of our sacred holy well. Not landlord, thief, or absentee, with nothing left to sell. I have a premonition when we call upon our own to hear on high a curlew's cry and remember where we're from. To restore this wondrous garden, our connection to the earth, to rid the need for waste and greed, and know what we are worth.
Barry Kerr with The Curlew's Cry, the opening track and the title track of his award-winning album, Curlew's Cry. Barry from Northern Ireland, where, interestingly, the curlew has been in steep and dramatic decline due to habitat degradation over the last 25 years. Numbers have become staggeringly small, and breeding pairs number just a few hundred until quite recently. And I have some good news. I've been reading about the curlew from the RSPB website, and one of the great successes in habitat regeneration and in the understanding of the ground nest habits of the curlew and how walkers and dog owners can look after the eggs and their breeding grounds and the hatchlings of the curlew. Well, this has been a great success, and over the last couple of years, they've been more than double the number of hatchlings surviving, and it means that there's been a notable and dramatic and very real increase in curlew numbers in Northern Ireland, and the same thing is happening in Great Britain generally. It's great news. I'm going to play you a couple more pieces inspired by curlews in the program. So let's have one more now from the beloved Spell Songs album, featuring many fine songwriters, including Rachel Newton. Let's hear her wonderful tribute to the ghostly and iconic curlew. This is Curlew from Spell Songs.
Unearthly song of a needy singer, a bubbling spring, a wild bell ringer. Winter bringer, your cry carries near over Cody Fell and Year. Low burns the wick now, close draws the edge. Will you curl you, let me fall and come to rest? Wonder bringer, your cry echoes
Rachel Newton with Spell Songs and Curlew. And if you're listening and you follow along with Thankfulness Folk on the Facebook page, I'd love to hear some of your impressions of curlews or your experiences of them on your walks or your birdwatch rambles. Do you see curlews where you are? Let me know. I'd be very interested to hear. And I'll be playing some more music on the program today inspired by curlews, because they have they are deeply embedded in the national psyche and in the art and culture of these islands. Speaking of the art and culture of these islands, my guest today has been contributing a vast amount, especially over the last 5 years, to the recording, collection recording, arrangement and performance of English traditional dance music. His name is Will Allen. He is from London. Well, he's from Kent, actually, but he lives in London currently, and he is in several bands, some of which I've featured on the program before, like Club Debris and Brown Boots. I've played Will Allen solo on his English fiddle albums, but he has two albums coming out almost simultaneously. One came out a couple of days ago with Owen Spafford, who you'll also hear on this program playing a track about curlews with Louis Campbell. Owen Spafford, Will Allen, and the guitarist Ben Filmer Sankey. The new album is called Sun in the Sands and starts from a point of view of London tunes, but is more an English traditional tunes album. And we'll talk to Will about that album after we hear the lovely Waterloo Dance from Sun in the Sands. And then I'll be joined by today's guest, Will Allen, talking about this and another incredible record I can't wait to play you. But first of all, here is Waterloo Dance from Sun in the Sands. Thank you. We've just heard a piece called Waterloo Dance, and that comes from a brand new record which came out on Wednesday by Owen Spafford, Will Allen and Ben Filmasanki. The album is called Sun in the Sand, and my guest today is Will Allen, who I feel like is a regular on the program, but when I look back, Will, it turns out it's three and a half years or more since you were on the program talking to me about English fiddle. A lot of water under the various bridges of London since that time. How are you doing?
It feels like only yesterday.
It does, doesn't it? Well, welcome back to the show. Will, you never do anything by halves. You went straight from being a very well-known melodeon player on the scene here to releasing your first solo album on the fiddle, and we talked about that on the program. And I won't go over that territory because it is in our archives, and our listeners, if they're interested in the backstory of Will Allen and the fiddle albums you've made, they can go and listen to that episode from 2022 on Mixcloud. So what we're going to talk about today, talking about not doing things by halves, is that you are releasing basically at the same time two very contrasting but also linked records of English music. The first we've just heard some of, which is your trio with Owen and Ben, and that came out yesterday and is called Sun in the Sand. And then you're also just about to release an album which we have previewed at the end of last year on the program, which is an incredible album I'll get you to talk about more with Becky. And that album is called Great and Small and features pipe organ and fiddle. But let's start with Sun in the Sand. Some people, if not most people, won't yet have had the opportunity to see this trio. Tell us how it got together and where it got its lovely name from as well.
Well, Owen Spafford appeared on the sort of London session scene a few years ago, and we quite quickly realised that we had a lot of mutual interest in music. And yeah, we started sort of forming an idea of making some kind of recording, and Ben felt like the obvious choice. You know, Ben's a guitarist and banjo player and fiddle player, and we all know each other through the Irish music scene, and we found that we had very common tastes within that. When Owen and I started talking about, okay, how can we take that approach to English music? Yeah, we realised that Ben had the same feelings, and we met up a couple of times. We did one gig at the London Folk Festival, and in this beautiful room in the Royal College of Music. I don't know how much of the stuff we played then ended up on the album. I can't remember. It's so long ago. But yes, then we decided that, okay, we need to make this thing. So we had 4 days. We went up to a beautiful cottage in the Yorkshire Dales. Yeah, and it was us three and Rowan Pickett, who recorded my fiddle things as well. Mm. And it ended up being, you know, four blokes, you know, making this thing, but also you're in each other's pockets all week, and we're all going through different things at the time, and it was I described it yesterday as Soft Boys Self-Help Club. That's how it felt, you know, we're sort of all working through things. And then that was last July, so it was very interesting playing it all like together for the first time properly last night, as it was.
Yeah. How did it go?
It was amazing. It was, I've been one of the best gigs I've ever done.
How fabulous.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. As soon as we started, I thought, oh, I feel so happy.
That's lovely, Will. Sun in the Sand is a roundabout near where you live, is it?
It is, yeah, yeah. It's very close to where Aaron and I live.
Right.
And Ben's not too far. And it originally started, we're like, okay, could we try and make an album of London tunes? It's from London. And we kind of put this big list together and went through them. And there's some good ones and some rubbish ones. And then a few that we thought of, well, we could just tweak that and rewrite that bit. So we did a bit of this. But in the end, what we've ended up with is a pretty even spread across England of where the tunes are from.
So it's not London specific necessarily. In fact, it's not.
Not really.
No.
No, but it comes out of the melting pot of London, I would say.
Yeah. Waterloo Dance. Tell us about that piece we just heard.
Yeah, that's an old tune that allegedly The Waterloo Dance was done on the Frozen Thames, you know, in the, I think in the 1800s maybe, possibly earlier. But, yeah, when the Thames used to freeze over properly, but there would be markets and circuses and stuff on the river itself.
Good heavens.
And apparently that's, you know, a dance that happened then and the tune for it. I don't know if it's true, but it's quite a good idea, you know.
So the trio, is it going to be a festival and touring concern, or are you mainly interested in working in the studio? What's the plan?
We have a couple of gigs booked in. We'll be at Broadstairs in the Baptist Church. And we may be at Sidmouth. I think it's not entirely confirmed yet. But we're just sort of doing the odd one here and there. I think it's more about the recording and then, yeah, sharing that. The gig last night was amazing. And I think if we were doing it every night for a month, I wouldn't want to lose the love for it, you know?
Yeah. How much of it is improvised in the moment?
Oh, a fair amount. A fair amount of it.
Because I know that's one of Owen Spafford's big things, working with Louis and others, and the weaving, has been to not overarrange things. You have a rough roadmap, perhaps, but then anything might happen. Is that the same with this?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I mean, we had one rehearsal before the launch gig, which was the week before, and that was the first time we played all the stuff since we recorded it last July. We sort of got to the end of that, and I think we were talking, oh, should we do it again? And I sort of went, I don't think we should.
Yeah.
It's there enough. You need a little bit of tension, don't you? You need a little bit of tension in the wire that makes you go, okay, let's concentrate. You don't want to lose focus.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like Ben is such a capable guitarist that you can kind of leave that the cording a lot to him. I guess, have you found that your role in this particular band is different perhaps to the role you might play in some of your other ensembles?
Very much so, yeah. I don't have to worry so much about the chords. I can let him guide it, which he does beautifully. One of the tracks on the album, there's a set of hornpipes, the Grand Hornpipe and the Ragstock Jig. We actually recorded, I think it might have been the third night of the session, we went out to the pub, we came back, got chatting to the farmers, had a few more drinks, and it got late and we were all a bit merry.
Yeah.
And we recorded it then.
Yeah.
And there's some harmony lines. We were saying this today, there's some harmony lines in there that I can't work out what they are. I'm very pleased with them, but I've no idea what they are.
The spirit sang them through you, yeah.
Yeah, maybe, something like that.
Fabulous. Yeah. We've got a lot to talk about, Will, because we have two records to discuss, which is rather lovely. But I just want to take a brief interlude to tell you that my theme on today's program, I've got a couple. One is a child ballad called The Dowie Dens of Yarrow, which we're up to. Sam and I have been working through the child ballads in order, and trying to play a recording of every single one of them. And when we started the project, we estimated it would take us 6 years. Well, we're in the fifth year, and we're only up to 214. But that's not bad, because it's only 305 in total, so we've done pretty well. And it's been fascinating, because we've actually had to commission quite a few new settings for ones that don't have recordings, including Nancy's setting Gil Brenton, which has become, you know, the opening track on the new Magpie Arc album, etc. So it's been quite fun and quite productive. So that's one of our themes today, The Dowie Dens of Yarrow, a very, very well-loved Scottish ballad. But the other theme today is the curlew, the bird, because I noticed yesterday reading that this week saw the International Day of the Curlew, a bird which has had its ups and downs in terms of numbers and was not necessarily endangered. In fact, the Eurasian curlew was very common for a long time, and England particularly, more so than Ireland, had not been struggling with numbers until quite recently. But it is on a red list now, and people are working very hard to become more aware of its habitat. And the reason I'm asking you about this is because last time I spoke to you on the program, we talked about birds and about our mutual love of them and of your photography of birds. And it struck me that as well as talking about your records, I might just ask you about curlews and whether you have seen many of them in your ramblings, and what you make of them and what they mean to you.
I'm quite lucky down here, actually. I'm in the southeast. There's a few spots that I can go to, not that far, where you're pretty much guaranteed to see a few curlews. And I know it's the cliche to say, but there's nothing like the sound they make.
Mm.
It's incredible. It's the most ghostly, beautiful. Yeah, you can't describe it. And I think that's the reason it's become such an icon, hasn't it, in the culture?
Absolutely. I mean, it's an amazing looking bird. It's an amazing sounding bird, and you're right about ghostly. It also the areas it inhabits, the marshlands, and the nature of the bird. It does It is quite a transporting experience to see one or to hear one or both, and it has inspired a lot of music. I've found several tracks to play on today's program inspired by the bird and by its sound, which is pretty cool. So there you are. Curlews, have you photographed any?
Yeah, loads, loads actually. And the other thing I love about them is that they're one of those birds that will occasionally defy the odds, in that if you spend any time sort of near the Thames Barrier, you know, East London, that kind of, it's a bit of a wasteland, you know, it's scrapyards and train lines basically. But if you're there long enough and you're looking at the mudflats, you're amazed at what is there.
Mm.
So many different types of sea ducks and everything, but curlew, I've seen them there as well, you know, and it feels so at odds with industrial boats going up and down. And
absolutely. I'm always amazed if I spend more than a day in London that stuff's never far from the surface if you're prepared to walk and explore.
Not at all.
Yeah.
And cormorants as well. You know, yeah. I walk across London Bridge a lot. I don't think there's been a time in the last 2 years that I haven't seen a cormorant on my way over that bridge.
Fantastic.
Either in the water or flying over, you know. It's just...
You definitely have an eye for it, though, as well. I mean, you probably see more wildlife and birds than the average London commuter because you're attuned to it, I suppose.
Wandering around with my head in the sky, not looking where I'm going.
Exactly. Now, you mentioned that the album started off with an idea of London-centric, but then it spread out to more broadly English music. But we're going to hear another track from Sun in the Sands now, Will, and it is London-linked, and it's a couple of tunes called Greenwich Park and William Brown. What can you tell us about these?
Yeah, well, Greenwich Park is also very close to the Sun in the Sands roundabout and pub and all that sort of complex. It's an old tune. It might be a playfully type thing. We played through it and we sort of went, well, that first phrase is great. Then it gets a bit weird. But then the first part, the B part, is just stunning. So we just, you know, took the bad bits out, basically. And, I love what we've got out of it. And the bit that comes after it, William Brown, the tune that comes after, I think that's a Yorkshire tune that Owen brought to us.
Mm.
But it's crying out for that kind of West Kerry drive that Owen is such an expert at. So we put that on there afterwards, and it just flies, you know.
Fabulous. Well, the album is called Sun in the Sands, one of two albums coming out in relatively short space of time from Will Allen and Friends. And you can get it and probably should find it on Bandcamp. That's probably the best for the band. You can get a digital copy. Will there be physical copies available of Sun in the Sands as well?
Yeah, certainly are, yeah.
Great.
Not very many, but we do have some.
Excellent. All right, well, let's have a listen to Greenwich Park and William Brown.
Thank you.
Two tunes, Greenwich Park and William Brown, from Sun in the Sands, a new trio album from Owen Spafford, Will Allen and Ben Filmer Sankey. And my guest today is Will Allen. Will, I have the great pleasure of seeing you fairly regularly in Sheffield, and one of the things that brings you up here is Sheffield Sessions Festival. For people who don't know about it, just tell them why people are travelling now from around the country to sit in Sheffield pubs for 3 days, sometimes playing the same tune over and over again with people that they know very well. What's in it for you? Why do you come?
I think Fee Fraser summed it up perfectly last year. She said, oh, this is the Works Christmas party, isn't it? I think the fact that, you know, nobody is booked, nobody's paid to do it. We're all just there because we want to have a nice time.
Yeah.
That is what makes it.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. It feels like, I think it feels like the beating heart of our session scene, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of waiting for the next town somewhere in England or city to have the idea and do another one.
Well, I was going to ask you that exact question. Do you think, given how many people are coming to it and what an upsurge we've seen over the last few years, particularly of young players, young session players, and this is critical, not young players who are just, and as they should, be trying to find gigs or to find a way of making their folk music into a living, which we're very lucky to do, and I never stop thanking my lucky stars that have been able to do it. But it's harder for youngsters to break into that commercially at the moment. And in a way, I've always been worried that there might not be the incentive for them to play socially because you can't have one without the other. But there seems to be a massive upsurge of social music making among youngsters now without necessarily a care as to whether it makes them a living or not. And I think that that is a really critical part of preserving traditional music. Do you agree?
I'd say that's the most important part of it. Mm. That's the bit that is, you know, actually a part of who we all are, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like you, I'm always amazed that I can make a living from this, but I think we all have to accept that what the tradition is just normal people.
Yeah.
Doing it because they want to do it. And that's why, you know, that's why I spend so much time playing with the rapper team or with the Morris team. And,
so could something like this take off somewhere else in the country?
Oh, almost definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Could it happen in London, like, or is it not likely to?
I think if it happened in London, it would have to be a specific area.
Yeah.
You know, it would be somewhere on the outskirts.
It would be Bradley's backyard, wouldn't it? As the sort of starting point. So Dartford and then spreading outwards from
Yeah. The other likely candidate might be Bristol.
Indeed, yeah.
So there's or Bath. There's a load of musicians in those areas.
Absolutely. Well, it was great to see you. I really love the Quebec session that you and Matt Quinn do. That was I didn't have to kind of work my way in by stealth dressed as a workman this year to get a seat. I came to the E-flat, B-flat and endured it just so I could get a seat for Quebec, and my effort paid off. It was a great session.
It was incredible. There was a moment, actually, that, you know, I think it was when we all stood up and it got so loud that my ears were hurting, and I thought, oh, that's a lot. And then someone shouted one more, and something in me went, oh, please, no, not another one. But you just can't stop, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's this sort of crazed, you know, group dynamic that we're all just punishing each other because it's great. It's mad.
It is. It is. Well, in contrast, let's turn to your next release. And it is a sublime, serene and very uplifting piece of work with Becky Paimley. The album is called Great and Small. We did have the pleasure of a sneak preview at the end of last year, but we didn't have a chat about it. For people who haven't yet come across it, Great and Small is a duo between yourself and Becky. Becky plays church organ, among other things, but she's a fantastic pipe organ player, the big proper church organs, and she really plays it extraordinarily. Not everybody would have come up with the idea of recording one violin in the same church as a church organ. How did you and Becky come up with the idea, and what did you discover on that journey, if you like, in terms of how to make that work and what the benefit of that combination is? Because it's an extraordinary record.
On reflection, it's been a few years in the making. I used to be, you know, quite anti-church. And then I was talking to a good friend, and that was where I learned that, oh, she's a Christian. I'm like, oh, okay, that's mm-hmm. weird. And that kind of reset my brain slightly. I said, well, okay, that's an interesting thing to learn. And then I started just playing in the church that Tower Ravens practice in. If they're busy doing a figure that I wasn't needed for, nip into the church. Oh, great acoustics, lovely sound. And then a bit longer later, I got chatting to Becky on Facebook before we'd met, because I'd put a post up about I'd done a gig down in Somerset in a little village church. I mean, a tiny village church. And I'd gone in the morning after, just had a little tinkle on the organ. And she sent a message saying, oh, have you got any pictures of the organ? I said, oh, no, sorry, but I've got this little video of a tune I was trying to write. I was trying to write a hymn, basically. And she said, oh, yeah, that's good. And we got chatting. I said, oh, while I've got you, are there any hymns you'd recommend that, you know, could be useful in a folk setting? Because years back, I'd heard Ed Johnson playing a couple of hymns on his box in a session at Shrewsbury. And I'd never properly taken in all of the different textures going on in there. And he's a genius, so he could play, you know, pretty much all the parts on one melodeon. But yeah, Becky and I got chatting and we addressed the fact that the English folk tradition and the English church music tradition have just been next to each other.
Absolutely.
For such a long time.
Yep.
Crossing over and feeding each other. And it was the same period in time where I'd been hanging out with Harlequin Morris and I'd been hearing Sarah Matthews playing the 29th of May, which I just thought, oh, that's a fantastic tune. I learnt that, started playing it. And I then went and saw my grandma and I played it and she went, oh, yeah, that's All Creatures Great and Small. I thought, no, it's not. That goes, dee, 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 dee. She said, no, it's the other version.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of it.
Yeah.
And, of course, it happened, there it is. And that ended up being the first track on Great and Small. Because there you go, it's a hymn and it's a Morris tune and we can't find which it was first and we don't care.
Well, I'll tell you what, I was going to play Sun Assembly, but I have played that tune on the show before. So why repeat myself? Why don't we have the 29th of May? Let's have that now. This is the opening track on Great and Small and you'll hear Will Allen on fiddle and Becky Pamely on church organ. This is the 29th of May.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, listening to that track, it's not just theory. You know, the intersection you're talking about between church, English church music, English folk music is no longer theoretical for you. It's real because you're playing it there. What's it feel like to work with Becky in a room like that with that incredible sounding church organ?
Beyond words, quite honestly. And the biggest piece on the album is probably Sussex Cotillion.
Mm.
And, you know, she's just got basically every stop out. And it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I'm stood underneath this organ.
Yeah.
You know, and it's such an odd thing because, like, you're looking at it's just some pipes. You can't see anything moving. But the sound wraps around you.
Mm.
And it feels like it wraps around you and carries you up. It's quite bonkers.
From a technical point of view, how do you go about recording a solo violin and an organ at the same time? How did you go about it?
We had, I had a little clip-on mic on the fiddle for up close. Then I was stood underneath a bigger mic. But I have to be stood right next to Becky, basically. So it's very close to the organ. So, I mean, Rowan Pickett did an incredible job on mixing it and recording it. Yeah, I don't really know how he made it work, but he really did. Because there's a huge range in volumes. Like, there's some parts where the organ is so quiet and the fiddle is so quiet. And there's other parts where I'm using every centimetre of the bow, which I'm not really used to doing, and she's got everything playing all at once.
I presume that the word patriotism and patriotic are not words that you probably label yourself with from seeing your work and knowing how interested you are in music from everywhere and in people from everywhere. But there must be something that happens that, you know, you weren't brought up in a church environment, but something must have changed in you as a result of making this record with Becky, I imagine. And some of it might link into Englishness.
Definitely. It was a really odd process in that sense, because I think, you know, I don't have any religious connection to these churches, but every time I see one, I'm like, oh, it was a great thing, isn't it? It's a great building. It's an incredible monument to commitment that normal people had, and in some places still do.
Mm.
Obviously, it's waning, and I think, you know, the church congregations are getting smaller and smaller. But I think this project to us shows that there are other uses for these places. You don't have to be a Christian to walk into a church and feel better about your life.
Mm.
You know, when I walk into the church in Weedon, the light's coming through the stained glass windows and, you know, you're touching wooden pews that have been there for God knows how long.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what your beliefs are, I don't think. They feel like a safe space, and I think they should.
Definitely, and I think most of the modern churches in England that I've had anything to do with music, where they were opening their space up to the public and to general things, would absolutely agree with you. And it's absolutely lovely and critical to their preservation that they are general community spaces. And music is central to that, isn't it? It always has been, really.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're sitting on, you know, thousands of spaces with beautiful acoustics that make you feel something.
Yeah.
So they absolutely need to be looked after.
Yeah. I guess there's not much opportunity for this to be a live performance, or is there?
Limited. There's so many things to consider. So you need the organ to be about the right kind of size.
Yeah.
We tried it in Wellingborough Cathedral. Too big.
Mm-hmm.
The fiddle was just... It just sounded like a fly in the distance, you know. So, yeah, it seems to be sort of the right size. The actual organ itself ideally needs to be up the front of the church so that we're next to each other.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can't really have people sitting there craning their necks. And also, they've got to work.
Yeah.
So many of them don't.
Yep.
Luckily, you can. There's the organ registry where you can just search every organ in the country and check the state of it, what it's got.
Yep.
It's quite handy.
So do you think you will... do any live performances, or have you done any?
We are doing a Sunday night late gig with it at Chippenham.
Amazing.
In the Calls.
Great.
The Calls has an organ. It used to be a church. And I think we're looking at getting a few other places as well. It'll be few and far between. A bit like Sun in the Sands, you know.
Sure.
Sort of sporadic.
Well,
it wouldn't be doable to do a normal tour.
No, and the good news is, people, if you get a copy of Great and Small, you don't really need to see it happening, because the sound of this record is magnificent, and it's definitely one to turn up loud and completely absorb yourself in. And a track that I'd like to finish with for now, Will, until our next chat, and we won't leave it 3.5 years next time, probably because the next time you ring me, you'll have 3 new projects to tell me about. But
I think I now know that 2 is the limit in this space. I'm not going to do that again, I don't think.
Fair enough. Well, we're here for you. Whatever craziness you throw at us, Sheffield Live is your friend, and we're delighted to have you as always on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again.
You're welcome. Great and Small is going to be available on which date? When does it actually fully release?
On the 9th of May.
Great. Not the 29th of May. That would have been just too obvious.
We tried, but unfortunately, I'm away at a festival, so we couldn't do it.
Fair enough. And it's would you direct people again towards Bandcamp for the best way to get hold of it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, super.
Yeah, has to be.
Well, congratulations on 2 great releases, Will. Look forward to seeing you for tunes and more merriment, possibly a cider in your case and a beer in mine at a festival over the summer. But in the meantime, take care and tell us about King's Fold and Goddesses, because it absolutely blew my mind when I first heard of this.
Thank you. King's Fold is a very, very famous hymn tune. It's also the tune to...
the Star of the County Down.
Star of the County Down, of course it is. And Dives and Lazarus and so many other folk songs. And actually this is one of the arrangements that Becky and I agreed that rather than writing our own, actually Vaughan Williams just got it right. So Becky's part is the Vaughan Williams arrangement, and I'm fitting in through that.
Do you know, he's such an incredible figure. You think we might have some kind of memorial library or something forevermore. Not a bad idea, is it?
Yeah. What a lovely idea. I like that. Yeah.
I might put it about, see if people
go. I'd probably go there if there was one.
It's got to be in London. Right. Will Allen, thank you for joining us on Thank Goodness It's Folk.
Thank you very much. I'll see you soon.
All the best. Will Allen and Becky Pamely. Isn't that absolutely beautiful? Now, I'm featuring Curlews as a theme for today's program, and there was a brief, short-lived band called Curlew in Shetland featuring the incredible talents of the fiddle player Davy Tullock. He died at the age of 41, but he was a huge contributor to the understanding of the Shetland fiddle traditions, especially the music of Tom Anderson, his teacher, and Davy Tullock was a performer and teacher in his own right. And he recorded one album with a trio under the name of Curlew. So from it, let's have some Shetland reels to finish the first half, and we'll be back with more in the second half, including this week's fascinating child ballad, The Dowie Dens of Yarrow, and some more tunes and songs inspired by Curlews. Don't go away. Back after this.